Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, and Justin Nimmergood will be out this week, but he'll be here next week filling us in on all the great things he's doing. So, that said, it was another great week here, and I was glad to visit some folks in Los Angeles this last weekend. It's good to touch base with the home team out there, since this is LA Talk Radio. So but back here in Texas today, and we have a wonderful guest with us today. Always excited to get a fellow coach on the show and be able to learn about them and what they do and how they do it, and it's just so much fun. So we have Denny Abbey with us here today. How's it going?
It's going great. Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, you're welcome. You're welcome. So I guess we'll start with kind of an introduction of yourself and kind of talk about what got you into coaching and kind of what areas do you practice in now?
Well, I'm a certified life coach and hypnotherapist. And I got into it because going through life, and I was originally in corporate America. I was a pharmaceutical rep and I was in sales, and I was very successful in those areas. And I decided to stay home and raise children for a while. And then I went through a divorce after 26 years of marriage. And I experienced a lot of heartache and difficulties. And I decided, you know what? No one should have to do these things on their own. And some of my background through college was public relations, communications, and psychology. So I decided to go back and get into coaching versus the psychology end of it, because I decided no one should have to go through some of the things that I went through by themselves. And that was, first of all, the difficulty in getting a divorce. And there's a lot of stuff with that. And then later in life, getting back out there and dating, starting relationships, figuring out who you are. And if you don't have a good support group or support, you know, you need that. And it is really hard. So, you know, you go through so many life changes. And if you don't know how to go back out there, start dating again, figure out who you are. If you get married young, which I did, I got married really young, right out of college. And I hadn't dated anybody since I was 20 years old. So I had to figure out who I was again. Who am I as a female, right? And then how do you go about doing that? And getting my self-worth back up there after a divorce. I'd been out of corporate America again, starting back out, figuring out, you know, that confidence level in that area too. So it was just something that I thought, I want to do this for other people. And that got me into what I'm doing. And I've branched out into other areas as well. But that is my love, is really helping people navigate that area.
Well, that sounds great. I know many people, like you said, married young and have to survive a divorce. There is this kind of identity issue. You know, who they are now, what are their needs now, how old are your children, if they have children, you know, what does dating look like now? And there's a whole lot of trial and error that people can go through. What do you think what are the top one, two, or three things that many of your clients coming out of the divorce, what are some of those things, those top three things that they're having to deal with?
Well, I think number one is a lot of people either, first of all, are not ready for the divorce. Maybe they didn't want that divorce. So it's being able to let go. It's loss. And number two is being able to trust again, or being able to move forward and allow somebody else into their life. And I'd say three is like themselves. A lot of times people don't feel very good about themselves. If they go through a divorce, they may feel like a failure. They may lose their self-confidence, and they don't know how to regain that, or learning, or identity, like I'd mentioned earlier, is who am I now? I've been either a mom, a wife, a career person, mother, or a father, a career man, whatever. But who am I as an individual to get back out there and, you know, learn to be somebody, you know, to go forward individually to meet other people?
Okay. So how do you, when somebody comes to you, and let's say you have a client that comes to you and they're in the throes of this, and let's say, I'll do a little hypothetical thing, let's say they've more or less have already grieved through the loss of the divorce, let's say, but they're still trying to figure out who they are. Do you put them through any, or what kinds of assessment things do you do, or what kind of paces do you put the client through to help them with that self-discovery of who they are now?
Well, one of the first things that I do when I get a client is we do what I call emotional baggage release. And what that is this really letting go of a lot of the things that are negative feelings, emotions, the blocks that are holding us back. And we got to clean house. Is forgiving, is releasing, it's all of that, because if we don't clean house, you can't move forward. So that's one of the first things, and it's identifying those things. And once we do that with the first appointment, then we have clean house. And that's then identifying and moving forward to start being able to build that new chapter. And let it look like whatever it is that they want it to look like. And that's usually feeling good about themselves. Now, I do hypnotherapy and neuro-linguistic programming and the coaching. So what that looks like is the first session is normally what we do is to release those blocks, is we do the emotional baggage release. And that really is like an analogy of there's a home, a cottage, and in that cottage is debris. And in a very safe way, they get to go in and clean house. So that allows their subconscious mind to go in and get rid of whatever they need to. And so they do that just through not telling me what they need to get rid of, but it's really them cleaning house where they need to. And I send them home with that recording and they listen to it for at least a week. And then they come back to me and then we address whatever we need to. Then we move forward to the next step.
So the next step is then doing some vision casting, or what they think things would, what they would like it to look like from there.
Right. So then when we talk about what is it that, you know, that we want to, you know, move forward with. So if that person feels really bad about themselves and they go, I can't even imagine moving forward in my life. I can't imagine dating someone else. I don't feel good about myself. Mm. I can't even speak to a man, or I can't even speak to a woman. I can't imagine letting go of anything in my past. Then what we're going to do is I have different things that I have them do, which are like mirror work, the way that affirmations, the way they speak to themselves. So we look at each individual. We look at how do they talk to themselves, you know, which we go through individually to that person, and we discover what are they doing? How are they doing it? And we put together a custom program for that individual learning to feel good about themselves. And it's daily routines. It's also looking at different activities and programs to move them forward. And then it's each programming on, maybe they have to step back. They've taken a step back and then they're either moving forward or going back a little bit. And what do we need to work on more on that individual person to build that self-worth, to build, you know, build their self-confidence? And then what do? Do they need help figuring out how to go forward in dating? Maybe they don't want to date. Maybe they want to get back into a career. So individually is whatever their needs are.
Good. Yeah. Because different people are going to have different needs. And now do you work with men and women?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I actually have probably a higher clientele of male than I do female. I think it's cyclical. One year I might have maybe 80% men and 20% women, and the next year it switches. So, which I think is really awesome. I love the fact that there's so many men out there that want to work on themselves, because a lot of people don't think that men do that.
Of course, being a man, I can say that. Absolutely. What kinds of differences, if any, have you noticed between your male and female clients?
Well, I think that it's interesting. A lot of the men don't want to share that they're going in for help. They may not tell people. Mm-hmm. They keep that to themselves because they got to get past that point that it's okay to go in and get help. I think that the one thing I really like is that once they find out that it's a safe place to come in and talk about things, they have a tremendous amount of relief at being able to have someone to go in and talk to. And I see a tremendous amount of growth with men, that they really, truly need someplace to talk. And the amount of release and stress and emotional growth with men is higher than even with women. Wow. Because a lot of times with women, they'll have a best friend. Mm-hmm. They have that safety group.
Men don't have that support group.
They don't. And they really need it. And I will have men will break down and cry. And then they'll apologize. So I'm like, don't apologize. You need to do this. And it's like, wow, I feel better. Men need to have a place to go. And somebody, and a lot of times they don't have their wife to be able to do that with, because they're afraid to share something they're fearful with their mm-hmm. spouse. And they're like, I can't tell her because then she'll be worried. I can't tell her because that's too much stress on her. And this is for the married man, right? Mm-hmm. And especially I have a lot of very successful men that come to me, and they'll have like entrepreneurs, and they have to have some place to release that stress, because if they don't, it just keeps building up on them. And of course, you and I both know how devastating stress can be to the body. You have to release that stress. You have to have some place to let go of all that. So I think that with men that find a place to go and relieve that stress and let it out, and sometimes it's just hearing yourself talk, being able to release that. And when they're trying to figure something out, having someone to talk to is just essential.
Absolutely. I know that, of course, I have and the LPC license and another license. But years ago, I was encouraged to go to school and become a coach. And I found that, you know, men are more likely to go to a coach, right? Yeah. It just kind of sounds like a better fit, like man coach, you know what I mean? Versus a therapist or a counselor. Just the word counselor, is very stigmatizing to some men, like, oh, I'm in counseling, like they're in trouble or at the principal's office, or they have a mental health problem because they're seeing a counselor or somebody that holds a license. So it is interesting that, that coaching for many men is a easier level of service to engage in.
It truly is.
Yeah. And so, okay.
That's exactly it. In fact, what I will say is I'm a coach. I'm not a counselor or psychologist or psychiatrist. I am a coach. And that sets mentally with them. Mm-hmm. They like that. And they'll say, well, all successful men have a coach. Everybody has a coach. And they like that. So that it does set mentally better with them.
It does. So yeah, that's something. I'm glad to hear that. It's always glad to hear men growing. So it's like, man, we get a bad deal sometimes, just teasing. But real quick, I know you and I were talking before the show, and one of the things, I mean, I help train young coaches. I'm sure you might as well, but every now and again, we'll get a phone call from somebody that probably might not have needed to work with a coach. They probably needed another level of service from somebody else. So if you could, kind of share a little bit about that story you told me about a call you got that person.
Yes. Sometimes there's somebody that should not be going to a coach. They need that different level of a psychiatrist or psychologist or somebody different. Yes. And I had someone call me, and they were ready to move to a different coach because they'd been with a coach for 13 years. Well, this person had threats by an ex-husband, the physical threats, and they were slicing tires and they were physically abusing them and all this. And this person had chemical imbalance that they needed medication for. And this was a situation where this person needed to be with a psychiatrist with medication, and they needed help with the law because their life was in peril. And so I was amazed that they had been going to a coach for 13 years because they should have had different hands. They should have been in other hands. And I said, no, I can't take you. You need to be with a psychiatrist. And I gave them some referrals because that was definitely not someplace you should have been. It was not somebody I should have been handling either.
Exactly. Or somebody suicidal or something. You know what I mean? You've got to.
A lot of people need medication too. And that's not something I can handle or anybody else. I mean, you've got to make sure that you don't take somebody on that you shouldn't.
Exactly. We got to stay in our lane as coaches. And that's our public service announcement today for that, because I think, now I'm going to say this categorically, and you can weigh in on this, but I think sometimes maybe young coaches that are young in their practice, or coaches that kind of need the work, will want to hang on to that client or take a client, you know what I mean? Because it's work and or the money or whatever. And man, you know, you can't do that. This is, you know, my opinion is, and I'll let you weigh in here on yours, but you know, you just can't do that. You need to stay in your lane. You need to do the assessment. You need to make sure that, you know, you can address their goals, you know, and that they don't have something going on with them that is impinging on them, on their sensorium or their mental state. You know what I mean? That they can't even work on coaching.
Absolutely.
So I'm sure you have some thoughts on that too.
Well, you know, what's I think wonderful in this industry is because we're in this industry because we truly care about people and we want what's best. And so we can't, it's like a family practice physician. When they have an area that's outside their specialty, they refer it on to internal medicine, to a cardiologist. And that's something that we have to do and have that kind of mentality as well. One of the things that I'm grateful for is I've actually had psychologists send somebody to me, because like one of my clients, I was going to a psychologist for years and still is.
As an adjunct to the work.
As an adjunct, because there was a dating dilemma with them. And they said, that's not my area of expertise. So they looked me up, found me online, and they sent me this client to me just for dating. So they still continue to go to their psychologist. They come to me for the dating part of it. And exactly. That's the cool part. So we both work with that client.
And that's a good thing. And everybody has their respective lane, and no ethics boards get involved because you're seeing two of the same provider and causing conflict, and somebody got jealous. And
right.
No, because the psychologist referred to you, and so they use you as
and
the adjunct.
That's awesome.
No, it is awesome.
And vice versa. I will send somebody out and refer to a psychologist or psychiatrist when I only handle my area.
Exactly. So that's that. And that's one thing I've enjoyed about the coaching space, is that it does fit well as an allied service provider alongside somebody else. I know another thing that has crept up in my life is I have a lot of these nutrition folks, the leaky gut people, and the anti-leaky gut people, and some of the fitness people, and then I'll do some of the more mental blockage stuff as the coach. So sometimes people have two coaches. They'll have like the physical coach or the nutrition coach, or the keto anti-cancer diet. Yeah, I mean, they're just really good in that lane, and they're like biochemists, you know what I mean? And then I'm doing some of the behavioral or thought blockage. So anyway, so that's good. So that was our training announcement today. And let's talk just a tiny bit about your training, because that was great. I was glad to hear your training had that amount of rigor to it, where it had a core component in one area, and you had talk a little bit, months and months to follow. Talk just a little bit about the training you went through.
Yes, I was trained out of California with Life Purpose Institute, and they are really pretty rigorous. Like you said, we go in for an intense program. And it's like from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., 7 days. And then they have us work for about 6 months before we even do practice clients, and then they do testing, and it's really pretty rigorous. And then we have a lot of testing. And then also I did the certification, and it took a year for hypnosis. So, after Dr. Steve Jones, I don't know if you're familiar with him, out of Las Vegas, is who I did that with. But the nice thing about the coaching part of it is that they do continuing education constantly, and they really are in touch with always making sure we're keeping educated, always. And I like that because a lot of the coaches don't do that.
Right. It's an unregulated industry, so it's up to each person in their own conscience to
whether even certified
or not. Right. And you gave me a nice horrific story about you saw something on social media for a $25. Well, we're not going to say who it was. But gosh, that's just taking money from people. And that really happened, huh?
I saw it.
Gosh, like, oh, Lord. That's amazing. Okay.
And there was like thousands of people saying, I want to be a certified coach.
Yeah, that's a man.
$25, I can be.
Someone's going to be in federal prison before that's over with. But anyway, wow. Okay. That's really good that you have that level of training, and that's good because, you know, as we showcase your practice and here at the end, we'll have touch points how people can find you and stuff like that. So, that's really good. So, okay. So most of your work then, is with the relationship and dating. Do you have other, types of clients? I know earlier you just said somebody might be looking to get into a career. Have you had other clients look for other things, not just a relationship?
Yes, I kind of, because of the hypnotherapy, I kind of work with a broad spectrum of different kinds of clients. A lot of people is helping them gain that self-empowerment, self-confidence. I help people with loss, overcome loss, which is a great area to be able to help. And then breaking habits, you know, so with hypnotherapy, that's a great thing. You know, stop biting those nails, or, you know, of course, stop smoking or lose weight. Those things are with hypnosis you can do. So that's a huge area for me. But with one of the areas with the dating is helping people overcome dating anxiety, building that self-confidence, learning techniques and stuff. And one of the big areas is, you know, are you familiar with Dr. Helen Fisher? Okay. I did a panel with her. I really like her. Anyway, but kind of doing that why him, why her, I kind of work with that whole thing of developing who should you be looking for and some of the personality tests that we look at. And so really kind of getting an idea who you are and who you should be looking for, who do you fit best with. So I kind of go through that with the dating, and then kind of looking at the patterns from before, why didn't they work, and kind of looking for what are you actually looking for. Because I find that with dating, what happens is people are always just chemistry driven. And it's like, yeah, at first. So here they are. It's like driving down a street to buy a house and saying, wow, that's a pretty house. I want to live there. Yeah. But right until they haven't gone into the house, they haven't looked at what that is, or they haven't even thought about, you know, how
baggage
many.
House,
exactly.
Baggage cottage.
Exactly. So it's, you know, you can't just do that when you're buying a house. You know, you're looking for 3 bedrooms, 2 baths. It's got to be in a nice area because the kids are going to go to school. You got to do the same thing with dating. You got to know what you're looking for, and it's got to fit your needs.
Exactly. Look for the cracks in the ceiling, cracks the foundation, some leaks.
It's what's in the house.
The leaks. No, yeah. But, well, that's good. It almost sounds like you might even give people tips on what to do on their first or second date.
Oh, absolutely. You better believe it. A lot of things with tips and how to talk to people and the mentality in dating and all that. Yes.
And some of the, not surprising, some of the men you talked about maybe that are in their 40s or 50s are struggling with dating these younger women, man. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. Like, okay, go ahead.
We were talking earlier about I get a huge variety of different types of dating. I have 20-year-olds coming to me with dating issues, right? And then I have, you know, the person who just got divorced at 30, 40, or 50. But then I have the single men who maybe are like 40 or 50 that want to date the 20-year-old. And the issues that they're having, they'll come to me and they'll go, okay, we're having some problems. You know, they can't relate to me. You know, all they have is their phone in their hand and they never look up. They don't understand me, you know, all this kind of stuff. There's so much drama with that 20-year-old. And I'm like, you're dating a millennial. You know, you got to understand this. But it's funny because they really don't understand the difference when dating somebody that much younger. They're just looking at how good looking they are and how sexy that is and how much it makes them feel good. But they're not thinking about the difference in the entire mentality. It's a completely different culture.
Yeah. Have you had it the other way where you have the 20-something-year-old female talking about, I'm dating this guy?
I have not had cougars come to me.
I want to save the whales, but I want some red bottom shoes too. And I can't get him to
I need one of those.
Hey now, that's another show. Seriously. but that's next week. So that's for our show, folks. Stay tuned on that one. That's going to be a good one. Golly. Okay. That's real fun. So, I know for me, as a coach, you know, water seeks its own level. It seems like over the years, certain types of people gravitate toward me for work for whatever purposes. And that's just kind of, you know, when I started coaching, I thought my brand was going to be kind of this way. But then once I got into the work, my brand has kind of changed with the work and, you know, how certain types of folks just organically come to me with certain types of issues. It just kind of happened that way. And I was going to ask you if that's happened with you over the years, and if you could, kind of tell our listeners, what is it about you? What are some of the things about you that attract coaching clients to you? If that makes any sense. Okay.
Sure. What my clients tell me that has drawn them to me, when they look, because there's obviously so many on the market or, you know, out there, a ton of coaches. And what they tell me has brought them to me is a lot of them have seen the video that I have on my website. And they said, what stops them is that they can tell my sincerity, my passion for what I do. And they say, you can tell that you're so passionate about what you do. And when they meet me in person and we talk, every one of my clients says the same thing to me. You are so passionate about what you do, and it's so obvious you care. And I hear that from all of them. And so I think that that is one of the things that really draws people to me. And one of my funniest stories, and I have to laugh because you never really know how you come across to people. But I loved this story because I hear about I'm so passionate about it. Mm-hmm. One of my clients is in his 20s and he's got Asperger's. And as you know, Asperger's, you can't really tell feelings. That's one of the things they have a hard time with. And he's gone through therapy for years since he was a little boy. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, you know, Denny, there's a lot of people have an energy and they're just kind of like this line, like, he goes like this across, and he goes, then I met you. And he goes, and you started talking about how you're going to help me and do all this kind of, and it was just kind of like this in your face, like, wah. And he said, your energy is so strong and so passionate, so powerful. It was like water is being thrown on me. It was like, wah. And he goes, I could actually feel it. And he goes, I can't feel energy. He goes, but I could feel yours. And I started laughing and I thought, well, if he can feel it, it must be strong.
Well, yeah. And I'm here with you and I can feel it. I tell you, but yeah, that's, well, good. That, that's really good, that you know, based on attraction rather than promotion type of thing. You know what I mean?
I think that's it. I truly, maybe it's all obviously the services that I offer, you know, is the differences for hypnosis, the coaching, and then neuro-linguistic programming is going to be essential. But it's also, I think, the sincerity and the fact that I truly care. I think that draws people in. I think that's it.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement. And interestingly for me, it's I care, but I'm fairly crass and mean and hold people accountable, and then more of a drill sergeant type of. Anyway, but you know, water seeks its own level.
But you know, here's something interesting. I am tough too.
You are.
I am tough. I hold people accountable.
You do.
I do. So I might be passionate, but I expect them. If they want results, they have to follow a program. They have to be accountable or they're not going to see results.
Okay. So let's talk about that then. That's a good area, because as coaches, we're here, we care, we've got the goals, we've done the assessment. Okay. And then the person has the goals that they've identified that they want to work on.
Yes.
Right. And we, as their coaches, are going to help them reach their goals. Right.
Yes.
Right. Okay. And then I'll speak for myself, but you can chime in. So let's say a week goes by, 2 weeks goes by. Hey, wait a minute. Now these are goals. And I would say something like, hey, wait a minute. These are goals that you put down, but yet there's a block. Or do we have to reconsider what we're doing here or change the goal? What are some of the ways that you get your folks unstuck if they're not?
Well, first of all, we identify and I have them do specific goals. Okay. So if they're not, so what I do is I check with them. Are you doing these daily things? And most of them are very normal.
So you have them.
Right. So it's like.
You have a checklist. You have a literal checklist.
Oh yeah. I send it to them and I'm like, and I will say, are you doing these things? And they commit to me what they're going to be doing. And so I will check with them on our next appointment. Have you done this? Have you done that? And they'll say, well, I'll say to them, if you want to feel this way, if you want to overcome this, you have to do these things. So you've got to commit to me that you're going to do this so many times a day or this, or you're not going to feel better. So do you want to feel better? Yes. Do you think you deserve to feel better? Yes. Then you've got to commit to me. You're going to do this. And so they'll say to me, I knew this was going to be hard coming back to see you, because they know I'm going to hold them accountable. And they'll be honest with me. And if they do something that they committed that they weren't going to do, like if I tell them, if they're trying to get over someone, I tell them they have to block them. You have to block them. And they're like, that's going to be really hard. I said, of course it is, but you need to block them. And I'm tough about that, because you cannot get past someone if you're continually spying on them, or if you're drive by, or if you're watching all their media. So I said, you have to block them. And I make them block them before they walk out the door. And they're like, oh. So I'm tough, right?
Okay.
But they get past that person. And if they do the stuff, so they'll come back to me and they'll go, okay, Dan, you're not going to like this. And I'm like, what? And they'll go, I unblocked them. And I said, well, and how'd that make you feel? It was really hard. The insanity
just came back right there.
Exactly. So I'll say, now you understand why I told you to block them. And I explained to him, that's why you can't get move forward. So let's go ahead and block them again. But that's what I'm saying. So I do hold them accountable. I'm tough.
Well, that's funny. I mean, it's not. I mean, yeah. I mean, like, and then the insanity came back, and then I couldn't sleep at night, and I started obsessing over this person, what they're doing. Like,
they
did the drive. Oh my gosh. Oh, woo! Sounds like you got some rough customers over there in your shop, man. I'm like, man, you driving by? You driving by that dude's house? We need to send you to another. Anyway, just teasing. Okay, then. Well,
I've had a lot of people that have been with a sociopath. Right. And I'm sure that you've dealt with people who've been with a sociopath. That is one of the hardest people to walk away from. Getting somebody to leave a sociopath is the hardest thing in the world, you know, because it's such a hold.
And folks, this is off the cuff. So in your experience, how would you differentiate a narcissist from a sociopath?
Ooh, that's a really fine line. Okay. So that there's so many levels of a narcissist, right? There's so many types of a narcissist.
Right.
So when you say narcissist and sociopath, the two, if it's a really severe narcissist, can be just tough. But like a sociopath is that person can be abusive and physically abusive and sometimes just the mental. But it's the person without guilt or empathy and remorse,
lack
right?
Remorse.
And usually is somebody who is so manipulative, and it's that cycle that they get into where you have the honeymoon, starts with the honeymoon, and then it goes into they
kind of battering cycle.
Yeah, the battering cycle, right? And they're accusing them of doing something wrong.
Right.
So that person is now trying to make up for something that they really didn't do wrong, but they're being accused of it. And is that gaslighting going on, right? And then so they're making up for it. And then all of a sudden, they've made up with this person after abuse or whatever. And then it's back to the honeymoon cycle. And it goes over and over and over again.
Awesome. Yeah. So now, given my former federal background and prisons and things, yeah, actually, so you have narcissists that are self-centered, then that can go up a notch, but the sociopath is actually this person that identifies themselves as kind of a rule breaker or criminal.
Charismatic.
They can be, but they're also kind of irresponsible. They with their money, they're impulsive. They can tell lies. They have multiple and frequent sexual partners. They have this kind of cognitive indolence, mental laziness, kind of live in the moment, and they're very hedonistic. But then the psychopath is the one that's up, because that's the one that really has remorselessness, callous narcissism, and no empathy and no regards, and really sees people as objects. So, yeah, we're right there.
Is the closest to a narcissist? Which narcissist would you say is the closest to a sociopath?
Yeah, I mean, so obviously, the thing of it is that a narcissist needs people to worship them. So the true narcissist is not going to be a sociopath.
Right.
Because, well, they could be a sociopath. They're not going to necessarily be a psychopath, because they really need people for that adulation and praise. I mean, gods need worshipers. So you can have a really aggravated narcissist or a narcissist that's kind of sociopathic, but, you know, the psychopath, and it's probably just because people misuse the word psychopath. So you could have this kind of, like you said, there is this blurring of the super aggravated narcissist and the junior sociopath. But in terms of, if you look at the word sociopath, and, you know, we break it down, it is more of the doing six or more things that would be grounds for criminal arrest, stuff like that, that really
blur into the criminal.
Right. There is this kind of lack of regard for laws and rules. You know what I mean? So anyway, go down that. I just wanted to hear that was unscripted, folks. Just wanted to, I'm always, because everybody has their kind of own nuances of how they understand. And myself included, the psychopath, the sociopath, and the narcissist. And
the severe narcissist is not good to be with.
No. I mean, these are, you know, that's why they call them character disorders or access to disorders, because along with mental retardation, Asperger's, and they just can't really change. You have to learn to manage those conditions. And so
it's hard for people to get free of them, because those people have broken down their partner's personality, and they've made them feel, especially with the gaslighting, they've made feel absolutely dependent upon them, and they've made them feel bad about themselves. And so pretty soon they don't, you know, they're almost, they've pulled them away from their friends and their family, and they're dependent upon them.
Right. They've isolated. So let's pause again. We're doing good on time. We got just under 10 minutes here. Let's talk about gaslighting, because that's the new buzz term. Are you being gaslighted? Come to my seminar on gaslighting.
Oh, is it?
Come to my seminar. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but it's more from the females to protect yourself from
those men that can't lie.
Yes, the gaslighters. And I'm thinking of San Diego, like the gas lamp. So I'm in the gas lamp district of San Diego. Just kidding. So, oh man. All right. So tell me, and this isn't a rhetorical question this time, so I am not going to say anything about gaslighting. So tell me what, in terms of what you've worked with in your practice and your coaching, you know, what is gaslighting and how you've addressed it? Now, you've talked about that a little bit here in the recent seconds, but let's talk about gaslighting, that mechanism in particular.
Okay. It's when someone is turning the situation around and they're like, when something happens, they're turning it around on the person and they're making it the opposite of what actually happens. So if someone does something, they're switching around and they're saying the other person does it or whatever, and they're confusing the person. So pretty soon that person's reality becomes so confused that they doubt themselves.
And they think they're the reason for the guy's problems.
Right, right. And so they doubt themselves. So pretty soon, you know, if it's really severe, they lose their self-confidence. They lose their self-worth. And that person, a lot of times, will tell everybody that this person's a bad person, that they're whatever. And so they start to believe some of this stuff. And it's really bad.
I had in a similar venue years ago, I had a middle-aged woman, and I'm middle-aged, so I can say that. Anyway, she had come to see me. She had just gotten out of jail because she kind of beat the pookie out of her husband, did a good job on him. I mean, you know, and so she had to come see me more as a court ordered type of thing. And the husband came in and it's like, you know, see, I mean, I'm the victim. And until I asked this question, I said, what did this man do to you to get you to the point that you tried to beat the snuff out of him? Well, you know, it's where you stop the video. Where's the story? If you just go like, oh, I came home and then she hit me with a golf club, I'm the victim. Like, wait.
Let's look at the whole thing.
Right. It's just like, holy cow, you know.
And so what happened?
I mean, you know, that guy got really honest really fast about what he had done to contribute to his wife.
It's amazing that he got honest.
Well, you don't have, it's either honest or out the door with Mr. Cameron, man. Is you don't have, you know, I don't have room. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just not going to listen to BS, you know, for too long. But anywho, that was good. That was a very succinct gaslighting seminar you just did. That was, I think we don't.
I wouldn't keep people in long enough, would I? I
don't know. Is it? Gonna have to add the role of hypnosis and NLP to remove gaslighting, other strategies for gaslighting prevention week.
Uh-huh.
Gaslighting prevention week. If so, Hinge and Tinder would shut down. If they, just kidding. Sorry.
Catfishing on there is like crazy. I've had clients come to me that are beautiful and beautiful women and men, and very handsome men that have had that, all the catfishing and
explain what that is for one listener that doesn't know.
You know, sadly, there are people that don't know about catfishing. Catfishing is when someone will take pictures of someone else pretending to be that person and another person, excuse me, and they will reel someone in pretending to be in love. They will create a relationship with someone and to do fraud. And so what they will do is they will at some point ask for money, and they will get money from that other individual. And it's a con artist game. Or they will actually create a love relationship and get someone to fall in love with them for whatever reason. I don't know that money always has to be part of it. But if you've ever watched the show Catfish, the original, I don't think they ever asked for money. But it was sad. I mean, people fall in love with someone else and it's not even the right person.
Now, can somebody meet somebody on Hinge, Tinder, etc., think that that's the person they're going to meet at Starbucks, and it's completely different person than their picture? Can you say you were catfished as well at that point because it was a misrepresentation, or the other stuff has to be in play for to be catfished? I'm just asking for a friend. I don't know.
You know, I don't know that would be considered catfishing, because if that was the case,
is there a term for that? If that was the case,
I would call that fraud. Oh. Right up front. No, I call it bait and switch, personally. Okay. That's a marketing term for a bait and switch.
Were you about ready to say that's about 86% of?
I would say that's more like 98%, especially with all of the apps out there that touch up everybody. You know what? You don't know what you're getting because everybody's touched up on their photos. And so when you get out there now, okay. It's so always interesting.
On Cat Hinge or Cat Tinder, then you can have your plenty of catfish instead of plenty of fish. Plenty of catfish. Woo!
Plenty of catfish.
There you go. We'll play on words here today. We're just so smart in Dallas today. We are bringing it to a whole new level. Got gaslighting, catfishing, all the major food groups here for dating.
I tell you, the fish.
I tell you, the things that people have to endure.
I know.
It's a trial and error.
Online dating is a great way to meet people in a wide spectrum, especially when you're busy and you're working. There's a lot of really quality people on there, but you really have to be careful and you have to use your head when you're doing that. I mean, you have to filter. You got to filter. You got to be smart.
And then I've been, and I have a Facebook feed of around 5,000 people and whatnot. And I go through the feed like, just because I say that you and I can be friends, doesn't mean you can start after you wave at me for 50 days and, boom. You got a quick war story on that, or you probably do just for yourself.
Well, the problem with being public on social media, some of the things you get through there are not pleasant.
I've had some pretty raw DMs myself.
The things they send you is not necessarily
right. And it's now a crime in Texas though if it's unwanted. So.
Oh really?
You didn't know that? Yeah, in Texas, if you send an unwanted D pic or how about this and that?
I get those all the time.
Well, me and you need to talk after the show.
Wow.
Yes, sir. Yeah, about 4 Sundays ago. That's a law that, and when the tobacco changed, so did the sexting law to kick in.
Wow.
There you have it, folks. I don't know if California is here, but there's a lot. Some people are going to get some citations after the show here. I think she's starting to bust out her phone. No, she's not. I'm teasing.
Those are not wanted, by the way. Those are not
oh yeah, they were unwanted.
Clarify, those are not wanted.
Speaking of unwanted, no, we're hanging in here. That's another because social media allows you to meet people and not have to go to bars or have to go to functions or be kind of confined to certain things, which there's nothing wrong with those live functions and whatnot, but yet. Wow,
I've gotten quite a few clients that became divorced because of cheating through the internet, through Facebook, through social media. It's created another whole dilemma.
Right. It's just, I always think of the internet like the modern day Tower of Babel, right? Whatever is there, you can get. So if you're in the mood to cheat, you can cheat. If you're in the mood to buy shoes, you can buy shoes. If you're in the mood to be a gardener, you can be a gardener.
Just gives you more opportunity.
To do whatever's in your heart.
Exactly.
Okay. Exactly. So, we got about 3 minutes left and I don't want time to slip away without our listeners being able to fully access your website and other touch points. So how can our listeners learn more about you with your social media and website?
First of all, I deal with clients all around the United States through Skype, FaceTime, over the phone, or in person. And you can find me on www.deniabbie.com, DENIABBIE.com. And I have Facebook, I have Instagram, Twitter, all of it. And it's right there on my website.
Okay. You have the links on the website. So, folks, I would definitely recommend. Visiting her website if you're looking for a coach, and that's good that she's available to see clients nationwide, as many of us do, and you'll be able to get that passion through the phone or Skype or Zoom or whatever platform there is. So great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It was so much fun having you.
Thank you so much for letting me.
Oh,
I appreciate it.
Yes, yes, yes. And yeah, it was good. Had a good time, good fun. Maybe we'll get you on here again in 6 months. We'll get a little update on if you've had any epiphanies or major strategy. Bruce, I found
great
a new
stories.
That too. Yeah, we can. I could have gone through some LA stories from this weekend. And we could. It's pretty much a similar crowd in parts of Dallas and LA. But anywho, well, with that, we'll bid everybody a great afternoon. Thanks for watching or for listening. Actually, we're not on TV yet, but thanks for listening to the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio today. Justin will be back with us next week. Don't forget to check us out on Instagram, the Concierge Coaches, Facebook of the same, LinkedIn, the Concierge Coaches, and of course on LA Talk Radio. Our shows are archived. Justin and I have our own page on LA Talk Radio. Also, you can find this on Apple Podcasts. That's right. And it's free. We've taken care of that for you, so you can download and or play our shows anytime, 24 hours a day for free. You're welcome very much. So with all that said, everybody have a blessed week, and we'll see you here next week on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Take care, everybody.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.